So we have in Parshas Tazria, the Parshas Tazria is known for the wars of Tzaras, which are primarily discussed in Parshas Tazria. Parshas Tzara is just the culmination of it, but the main halachas of Tzaras are of a person are discussed in Parshas Tazria. But yet, at the beginning of the Parsha, we have a couple of psukim which touch upon a very, very important halacha, which is relevant very, very frequently. And that is the idea of having the Bris Milah on Shabbos. And this is based on the following. The Torah tells us at the beginning of the Parsha, it says, Vaidarosha Moshe Lemar, Dabro Bnei Yisro, Lemar Yisho Kitzas Ria, the older Zachar, a woman who will conceive a child and give birth to a male, Vitama Shivas Yomim, and she will be Tame for 7 days, he may need that to both a Titma, the same war as a Nida. And then the next pasuk says, Ubayom Ashmini Yimol Tsara Lasso, that on the 8th day should be the Miwa. The Miwa of this boy should take place on the 8th day. So this pasuk is sort of thrown in over here. We know that the basic dinim of the psukim, the parsha of Bris Milah, is actually found in the Torah and Sefer Bereishis in Parshas Lech Lecha. But nevertheless, we have over here we have a very important pasuk which says Uvayom Hashmini Imo B'sara Lasso, that on the 8th day should be the Milah of this child. And the Gemara tells us in the Sefer Shabbos on Kuf Lamed Beis, we have it here on the first sheet, about the 4th line from the top, the Gemara says, the Gemara is trying to interpret the Pesukim, and the Gemara says, Mani Mechaim Shmini Yimo. So the Gemara was considering, when it says on the 8th day, you should have the bris, what about if it falls out on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, Talmud Lomar B'yom Afilu B'Shabbos. Says the Gemara that since it says the word Bayom Hashmini, it did not have to say the word Bayom. It could have just said Ubashmini Yimo Sarawasa. On the 8th day will be the Mila. Why does it say Bayom Hashmini? So Bayom Hashmini, the extra word Bayom, teaches us that Afilu B'Shabbos, that even if a bris falls out on Shabbos, it should take place. And the finish of this is because the act of a bris mila involves making what we would loosely call a wound in the child or in the person who's having the bris, let's say the child who's having the bris, and that would have been a violation of one of the 39 malachos. That would have been considered a violation of the malacha of shochet, which is one of the 39 malachos. How exactly it's considered shochet is a different discussion, but the fact is it is one of the 39 malachos, and therefore I might have assumed that it should not take place on Shabbos. It should not take place on Shabbos because after all the bris milah is a mitzvah, but Shabbos is a serious iser. Shabbos is a losaseh, the Gemara refers losaseh sheyesh bo kares, that this is from the cardinal sins in the Torah. So I would have said on my own that probably if a child was born on Shabbos, the bris should not be on Shabbos. Nevertheless, it comes to the pasuk here, Vayom Hashmini, and says, Vayom Afilu B'Shabbos. And this is the halacha that we have, and we've all seen this, that a bris milah can take place on Shabbos. What I would like to discuss today are scenarios where a bris milah would not take place on Shabbos, and the derivation of those demons. So before we get to that, we have to know a very, very important halacha which is connected to this. A bris milah itself is docha Shabbos. However, the Gemara says elsewhere, at really the beginning of the 13th parak of the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, 16th parak of the Gemara Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara says that the machshirei milah are not docha Shabbos, which means that something which is needed in preparation for the bris is not, which means that the act of the bris itself can be done on Shabbos. And even though that's a full Shabbos, you're violating Shabbos technically by doing such a thing, you could do that. But the machshirei milah, something which is needed to prepare for the bris, that is not docha Shabbos. So therefore, the case which is brought in the Poskim and Shulchan Aruch is if you live in a place where there's no Erev, and the Moel does not have a knife, does not have the knife to do the bris, and it will involve, in order for him to get the knife to do the bris, somebody's going to have to carry it in the street. For whatever reason, he can't, I guess the baby is in one place and the knife is in another place, so you can't, in a situation where there's no Erev, so you're stuck, something has to move, the baby's here and the knife is there. The halacha is, in that situation, the bris would not be done on Shabbos. Why? Because even though a bris itself is docha Shabbos, but that's only the act of the bris. But the whole Shabbos is not involved in the act of the bris is docha Shabbos. But what is needed in order to facilitate the bris, that is not docha Shabbos. The modern day application of this would be, let's say you had a child in a different town and the mole could not get there on Shabbos and he was not aware of it, let's say, before Shabbos. It's you have to have a certain respect for Maulim, because really by halacha they're obligated to travel, even if it means spending Shabbos away from their family. They're obligated to facilitate a bris that should take place on Shabbos. But let's say for whatever reason the Maul could not get there before Shabbos, and the only way he could get there on Shabbos would be to go in a car. So the halacha is that he can't do that either, because of the fact that getting the mole to the bris is also considered mashire mila. This is not the bris itself, this is a preparation for the bris, and that cannot be done on Shabbos. So this is the basic, these are the basic rules that we have. And every mole is aware of this, that the bris itself, the act of the bris can be done. Other things involved in preparation for the bris cannot be done, and therefore when a bris is done on Shabbos, so it requires some preparation in advance. Now, when can you not do a bris on Shabbos? It would seem from here that the act of the bris milah is of the Shabbos period. So we find a number of situations, starting with the Gemara that we find is on the second page. On the second page, we have the Gemara says a remarkable thing, and all of these halachos are derived from the psukim in this week's parsha. Okay, so the pasuk says in our parsha, the pasuk said, "Vayom hashmini imo b'sar or loso, b'sar or loso." Says the Gemara, it's on in the Gemara Shabbos. He says on the Kuklam and Dalit on the day. It's on on sheet number 2. It starts on the top line. Tana Rabbanan or loso. The Gemara says that only that when it says in the pasuk or loso, means the word arloso in the pasuk, meaning the foreskin of this child can be circumcised on the eighth day. So the Gemara is bothered. Why do we need the word arloso in the pasuk? If you tell, we know already what a bris involves. That we know from what it says in Parshas Lechavot. So why does the Torah just say Leyom Hashmini Imo? Why does it say Bisar arloso? So the Gemara makes a remarkable drasha and says that this extra word of arloso teaches us that arloso vadai docha es haShabbos. That only a vadai arlo is docha Shabbos. Below suffix docha es haShabbos. That only a vadai situation of a bris can be docha Shabbos, but not a suffix. Which means that the only time you can do a bris on Shabbos is in a situation where you're sure the person needs a bris on this day. Now, there are a number of situations where that would come up, which I don't want to get involved with because they're very, very rare. But the most common application of this would be in a situation where a child was born in the period of the day called Bein HaShmoshos. If a child was born in the time between, by us, what we say, between the time the sun sets and the time the stars come out, which there are different opinions how long that time is, as we know, different opinions, some say it varies on the city, but whatever the case may be, if it's that time of the day, we know is considered a time of suffix. That is considered a time where it's a suffix, it's an inherent suffix, whether that is one of the remarkable dinim in the Torah that we have every single day, a period of time which is considered a time of doubt. That we can never resolve this, it's unresolvable. And therefore in a situation like this, the Torah says that you have to be machmir both ways. This is why we keep Shabbos for 25 hours. right? Even though we know that every day is only 24 hours, yet every Jew keeps Shabbos to 25 hours. Why? Because on Friday, you begin before the period of doubt, and on Shabbos, you end after the period of doubt. Because since Shabbos is Torah law, so therefore one has to be matner both ways. So therefore we start Shabbos from the sunset on Friday and end Shabbos when the stars come out on Shabbos. Even though theoretically if you say that's inconsistent, make up your mind which one do you go by. If you go by the sunset, you should go by the sunset on both days. If you go by the stars, you should go by the stars on both days. Nevertheless, since it's a suffix, so we play it both ways. Therefore would come out that if a child was born on Shabbos in the Bein HaShemashos period, in other words, let's say yesterday, I believe the sunset yesterday was at 7:45, so if a woman would have given birth to a baby boy at 7:50, or 7:55, or whatever, so the halacha would be that bris, you say, well, it was still Shabbos, everybody was sitting by Shalosh Shudas at that time, or certainly everybody was still keeping Shabbos, nobody would have made Havdalah then. Nevertheless, the bris cannot be held on the next Shabbos. It cannot be held on the next Shabbos, and the reason for that is because of the fact, well, that this is a suffix. It's a question whether this is the eighth day. And if it's questioned the eighth day, a questionable bris will not be docha Shabbos. Now you'll say to me that, what do you mean? In this case, there's another reason why the bris can't be on Shabbos. Because the bris is supposed to be on the eighth day. And who says it's the eighth day altogether? It could be that if you say that something that's born, the baby that's born, Bein HaShemashos, is really considered, that Bein HaShemashos, it could be it's already Sunday. It could be it's considered already after Shabbos. So therefore, you cannot do the bris the following Shabbos, because who says the following Shabbos is the eighth day? It could be that the following Shabbos is only the seventh day. So the answer to this is that that's true, but this law that a bris that is a suffix bris is not docha Shabbos would also apply in the case where the child was born Bein HaShemashos on Friday. If the child was born Bein HaShemashos on Friday, meaning that Friday, so the candle lighting was this past week probably 7:27 or something like that, if you made the late Shabbos, and let's say a woman gave birth to a baby boy at 7:55. So at 7:55 everybody was observing Shabbos, everybody was sitting in shul, everybody was dressed for Shabbos. Nevertheless, you'll say, well, in this situation, so you have nothing to lose because however you want to slice it, you'll say, if Bein HaShemashos is a suffix, so what would be the suffix? The suffix would be, is it Friday or is it Shabbos? So you'll say, well, a bris has to be on the eighth day. It cannot be before the eighth day. So the following Friday, I'm not going to do the bris because it may not be the eighth day. But why can't I do the bris on Shabbos? I'll do the bris the next Shabbos, right? Because it's either the eighth day or the ninth day. But either way, you can do it. You can't do a bris before the eighth day. For whatever reason, a bris was pushed off. You can do a bris any time after the eighth day till a person, as long as the person lives. A person who didn't have a bris on the eighth day, so the mitzvah goes forever. The mitzvah goes for 120 years. That he has to have a bris at some point. That obviously, as soon as possible, but theoretically could be even a person 100 years old. So in a situation like that, the bris could not be done on Shabbos either. The bris could not be done on Shabbos either, because since it is a suffix, whether Shabbos is the eighth day, and we have another halacha, which the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara tells us that from the pasuk Bayom Hashmini Yimo Vesara Laso, the Gemara says a very, very important halacha, that the only time a bris is docha Shabbos is if it's on the eighth day. If the bris is, because the Torah says, the pasuk that we learn it from, Ubayom Hashmini Yimo Vesara Laso, that the Gemara says that Bayom Hashmini, that as long as it's the eighth day, then even Afilu B'Shabbos. So the Gemara says elsewhere, and this is brought in the Poskim, that only if it's the eighth day. If it's the ninth day, then you can't do it. Which means that if a bris was pushed off, was delayed for whatever reason, it happens child is perhaps yellow, or what you know, the count is too high, or other factors, the child's not well enough to have a bris right away, and the bris gets delayed, and the doctor says that the first day that it's possible to do the bris is on Shabbos, the halacha is you can't do it. Because it's only Bayom Hashmini Yimo Basar Oloso. It's only on the eighth day that you could do the bris on Shabbos. If this is not the eighth day, you can't do it. Therefore, it comes out that if a baby was born on Friday, Dein HaShmashos, so now you have the following consideration. You say, well, it could be that the following Shabbos is the eighth day, or it could be it's the ninth day. So now, if it's the ninth day, a bris on the ninth day cannot be done on Shabbos. A bris on the ninth day cannot be done on Shabbos. A bris on the eighth day could be done on Shabbos. But you don't know that this is the eighth day. So you say, well, the kid hasn't had a bris yet because I was afraid to do it on Friday, because Friday I was afraid may not be the eighth day. So Shabbos is the first day that unquestionably he needs a bris, either because it's the eighth or the ninth. Nevertheless, since it's a suffix, so the halacha is that you cannot do a bris misafik on Shabbos. So therefore, we have, this is a well-known thing, that a woman who goes into labor on a Friday afternoon, somebody has to keep an eye on the clock to see when, if it's going to be a boy, you have to know when the bris was born, when the baby was born, exactly the time. And as we know, the Moalim will not do the bris if it was during any time of suffik. There are different standards by different people when it's considered the Ben HaShmashos. I see them have a different consideration for when the Ben HaShmashos is, but as far as I know, the classical situation of Mila is that any time a child is born from the onset of Shabbos, which is the sunset on Friday, until the Tzeis Kochavim ending Shabbos, which in this case many people would hold the shear of 72 minutes, even if they don't personally go by that, but when it comes to this, they would concern themselves with that shita. Any time a child is born in that time of doubt, the bris is not done on Shabbos. And this is true even if it means delaying the bris for several days, because the halacha that a bris does not push off Shabbos when it's not on the eighth day also applies to Yontif. It also applies to Yontif, that a bris is not docha Yontif unless it's the eighth day. And not only that, but it's not even docha the second day of Yontif unless it's the eighth day. So therefore, by us in Chutzlaret, where we keep 2 days of Yontif, it is possible for a child to have been born Dein HaShmashos on Friday, and let's say you had a Yontif, let's say like Pesach was a couple of years ago, where it was Shabbos, and then Pesach began on Sunday, so you had Shabbos, Sunday, Monday. So if the baby was born and Dein HaShmashos on Friday, the bris would not be until the following Tuesday. The bris would not be till the following Tuesday because of the fact that a bris in doubt is not docha Shabbos and it's not docha Yom. So this is a halacha that I think is fairly well known, but the basis for this din is this pasuk which says that a suffek is not docha Shabbos, or suffek docha the Shabbos, and the Gemara later proceeds to say that this would apply by a case of Noah Dein HaShmashos. Another situation where a bris is not done on Shabbos, which is not as well known, is the halacha is that if a boy is born in a cesarean section, if a boy is born from a situation where the child was born with a C-section, this bris is also not done for Shabbos. This bris is also not docha Shabbos. This is not well known, but the fact is that any moel who knows his stuff, so to speak, so if he gets a phone call after Shabbos from someone saying that, oh, I got a mazel tov, my wife just had a baby boy, and the boy was born clearly on Shabbos, no question, the boy was born Shabbos morning, so the bris is going to be next Shabbos, before he packs his bags and makes arrangements to go there for Shabbos, he has to ask, was it a natural delivery or was it a C-section? Because if the baby was born in the C-section, such a bris is not docha Shabbos. Why is that? So the Gemara says as following. This is the derivation of this halacha is a little complicated, but it is also based on the sukkim in this parasha So I'd like to just spend a little time focusing in on it. If you turn to the second side of the second sheet, so the Mishnah tells us in the beginning of the fifth paragraph of Masechet Megillah, the Mishnah tells us that Yosei Dofen, a child born in a cesarean birth, is called in the halacha Yosei Dofen. Yosei Dofen means that he came out from the side. It didn't come out the normal way. The child was not born the normal way, but rather came out from the side. So the Mishnah tells us a remarkable thing. The Mishnah tells us in a case where you had a child born in Yosei Dofen, so Ein Yoshvin Olav Yimei Tumah Vimei Tara, the Ein Chayovin Olav Karban. We had at the beginning of this parasha, Tazria, the Torah spoke about the fact that that a woman who gives birth, so there's a certain period of time that the woman is Tameh, and then there's a halacha that's called Yimei Tara, which in our times really isn't relevant, as we'll see in a minute, it's not so relevant, but the fact is that there are different time periods that the woman is considered Tameh. Says the Gemara that theoretically, if a child was born in a cesarean birth and no blood came through the womb of the woman, which does not happen today in our times, but apparently in the time of the Gemara it did, so such a woman would not be considered Tameh at all. She would not be considered Tameh at all, and she would not be separated from her husband at all. The fact that even though she just had a baby, but the halacha is that the tumah of a woman that was called tumas leva, which is discussed at the beginning of Parshas Tazria, this only applies to a child born in a natural way. But if the child is born in a cesarean section, the Mishnah tells us, "Ein yoshkin alav yimei tumah, yimei tara." How do you know this? So if you skip down to the Gemara, by the way, it's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Amar Rav Mani Bar Kadosh, my time I'll be Rabbanan. Amar Kro, the reason for this is because it says, Isha Kisazria, the older Zohar, that a woman who conceives a child and then gives birth to a boy, says to Gemara, a remarkable interpretation. Ad Shetele Bamakam Shehim Azraz. That this din only applies if the birth goes through the same way that she conceived the child. But if the birth went a different way, and therefore, and meaning that the child was born by making an incision in the woman, and not by the normal way of birthing, so then the halacha is, says the Gemara, that the Yimei Tumah would not apply. The Yimei Tumah would not apply. What the Torah says, that Yoledes, that a woman who gives birth is coming for 7 days, that would only apply if it was a natural birth, not by a cesarean section. Now, it happens to be, in case you're wondering, it happens to be that this din is not relevant in our times. This, even though this is brought, everyone passes halacha this way, the Rambam has it, Shulchan Aruch has it, everybody has it. But the fact is that the halacha is not relevant because, Bamed Bar Mamurim, when is this din speaking? This is only if the woman does not bleed in the way that the blood comes out from her womb, that the blood comes out from her uterus, which apparently in the times of the Gemara, the way they did a cesarean delivery, it could happen that way. And therefore, that apparently that's the way it was. And thus, the halacha would be that the woman would not be tumah. But in our times, every woman who gives birth has a din of tumah, and therefore, this kula, which sounds like a remarkable leniency, a remarkable din, that, the woman is not separated from her husband at all, this kula does not apply in our times. This is the halacha. However, the fact is that the Gemara says that theoretically, or in the times of the Mishnah, in the times of the Gemara, the din was that a Yosei Dofen is Ein Yoshvin Olav Yimei Tumah Vimei Tara. There would not be any observance of the laws of Tumah. So, says the Gemara, now here we flip back to the first sheet, the second side, says the Gemara in the bottom of the page of the Kuf Lamed Hei, the Gemara says the following thing. The Gemara says, on the top of the page, Amar Rav Asi, Kol She'imo Tmeo Leida Nimo Lushmona. That anyone, when does a bris take place on the eighth day? Only if the mother had tumas leida, but the kol she'ein imo tmei leida ein imo l'shmona. But if the mother was not tumei tumas leida, then the bris would not take place on the eighth day. This is what the Gemara says, an incredible din. The Gemara says, how do you know this? The Gemara says, Shenemar, Isha Kizazriya, the older Zohar, and then it says, Ubayom Ashmin Imo Sara Waso. By the juxtaposition of these two psukim, the first part says that there's a halacha of Tumas Leida, and that only applies in a situation where the woman gave birth in a natural way. The second halacha is, the second pasuk says that on the eighth day should be the bris. Says the Gemara that these two psukim are connected, and therefore, if a child is born on a cesarean birth, the bris would not be on the eighth day. This is not talking about Shabbos. The Gemara is saying over here, according to this Gemara, would come out, Rashi on the Gemara is not on the page, regrettably, but Rashi on the Gemara says that what Ravasi means to say is that if a child is born a cesarean delivery, the bris should be on the day he's born. This is what the Gemara says. Right? Now, no one ever heard of this. But this is what the Gemara says. Where do they get this from? Because it says, Isha Kisasriya, the oldest Zohar, that if a woman conceives and gives birth to a child, and the Gemara that we just read in Nida says that means that the only time, the Tama Shivas Yamin, the only time the woman is Tame is if she gave birth in a natural way, but if she gave birth in a Yotzei Dofen way through a cesarean, then she's not Tame. That's what the Gemara said in Nida, and it comes along the Gemara in Shabbos and builds on that and says, now look at the next pasuk. The next pasuk says of Ayom Hashmini Imo that on the eighth day is the bris. If you put those two things together, it comes out that only a child who's born naturally has the bris on the eighth day. If it's not born naturally, the bris is not on the eighth day. This is what the Gemara says over here, which is a shocker to everybody. No one ever heard such a din, and the reason for that is because this is not the maskana of the Gemara. Because the Gemara continues and debates this point, a very interesting Gemara, they go back and forth. And basically, I can't read it, you have the page here, you can read it for yourself if you'd like, but basically the conclusion that the Poskim is not even clear from the Maskana of the Gemara how we come out, but basically the Rishonim, who gleaned the Halakha from the Gemara, sort of made a compromise. And said that really we hold, because the Gemara then brought proofs that it's not true, that even an unnatural delivery should be on the eighth day. The Gemara goes back and forth. And the Hachra, the conclusion of the Gemara is that if the child is born even through a cesarean section, the bris is on the eighth day. However, not if the eighth day is Shabbos. In other words, like a compromise. Because there are those who say that if cesarean birth, the bris shouldn't be on the eighth day at all. So even though we don't accept that completely, because we do a bris for a cesarean child on the eighth day, we don't do it right away, we wait till the eighth day. But if the eighth day would come out on Shabbos, so then, in deference to the fact that that the Gemara is not, there is no conclusion to this Gemara, the Gemara presents both sides and doesn't come out to a hakra, so therefore in those situations very often it's unclear what the halacha is. So in deference to those who hold that the bris shouldn't be on the eighth day in a situation like that altogether, we don't do the bris on Shabbos. So therefore we have another situation where bris is not done on Shabbos, is not so well known, but if a child is born a cesarean birth, yes, the bris should be on the eighth day and not sooner, the bris must be on the eighth day. However, if the eighth day is Shabbos or Yom Tov, you don't do it. Another shaila which comes up when we talk about a bris being done on Shabbos is, how do you know when the baby was born? How do you know when the baby was born? So you'll say, well, you look at the clock. You look at the clock and you see what's okay, I know it was Shabbos. So we have a case which happened within the last century which stirred up a lot of discussion, which a shaila which happened in Yerushalayim. Apparently this is in the early 1940s. The Rav of Yerushalayim at that time was a person by the name of Tzvi Pesach Frank. Tzvi Pesach Frank was the Rav of Yerushalayim for many years, and the following shaila was brought to him. This is brought in his Sefer Har Tzvi in the first Chela. And the shaila was as follows. There was a rug, it doesn't say exactly where, but apparently it was in Eretz Yisrael. And the early 1940s, or perhaps the late 1930s, was a very, very difficult time for the Jews who lived in Eretz Yisrael. It was a time of hunger. It was a time of hunger because the war in Europe made it difficult. The supplies from the outside were very difficult, and I think it was hard to come by, and they had a lot of internal situations, and I think there was a drought in Eretz Yisrael on top of it. So it was a time of great hunger, and people were impoverished. So the story happened, a true story, that one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, doesn't say who or where, but one of the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael one morning opens up the door to his house, and lo and behold, there's a baby at the doorstep with a note attached to, clipped on to the diaper or the whatever it was. And the note said as follows. The note was written in Yiddish, and the note said, "Dear Rabbi, we have a terrible, Baruch Hashem, we were privileged to have a boy born to us. But we live in terribly impoverished conditions. We don't have any food even for ourselves. And we don't see any way that we will be able to sustain this child, at least until the situation improves. So therefore, we're asking you, being that you're the Rav, and you have perhaps the wherewithal, maybe you have access to Sukkah, or you could, you know people, maybe will be interested in taking in a child, that we're leaving this child with you until things get better. Until things get better," and a name was signed at the end of it. The name was, the person signed his name and said, "This is our situation. We cannot, in order for this child to survive, you can't be with us." Why the person dropped it off at the doorstep or whatever is unclear, but apparently the Rav did not know clearly who this person was, but it was written in the note that please take care of this child for a period of time. And then eventually, when things get better, we'd like to come and raise the child as our child, but for now, there's nothing we could do, and we appeal to your kindness to please see to that this child is taken care of. P.S. This child was born, this little boy was born last Shabbos, and therefore, the bris, you should see to it that he has a bris this coming Shabbos. This is what it said. So the question was, the question comes up, so the shaila was, so now what do you do? Because you say, well, when do you do a bris on Shabbos? You do a bris on Shabbos if you know the child was born on Shabbos. Now we know today, right? Even if you don't look at the clock, but someone, one of the nurses, they're always careful to make sure they get the time, and it's not a difficult thing. But here, you have a situation, whoever it was who signed the note, this Rav didn't know who he was. But it was signed, the letter was written in Yiddish. So apparently it was from a Jew, I don't think it was suspicion came from an Arab. It was written in Yiddish, it wasn't written in the grid. Right, so apparently it's a Jewish child. There's no way to know that necessarily, except from the note. But apparently it's a Jewish child. But this rabbi who now has been given the responsibility of taking care of the child and seeing to it that the child has a bris, he has no idea. Who says the child was born on Shabbos? Do you have a note? So what does that mean? Is that reliable? What do we say about that? So the rabbi who had this question didn't know what to do, so he turned to the big rabbi in Jerusalem, he turned to a suitcase of Frank and asked him what he thought. What he thought. So he said the following thing. So he said that as far as believing the person that the bris should be on Shabbos, he said it appears quite clear that this was written by a Jew. We don't have to suspect that the person signed his name. Okay, it could be, you know, theoretically it could be it was a forgery, but it doesn't seem that way. It seems it was written by a Jew. So we have a klal, we have a rule in halacha that ein echad neman bisurim. That when it comes to a question of Isser, when it comes to a law of Isser v'Heter, whether something is a shaila of something, either it's mutter or it's Usser, so the halacha is that you could rely even on one witness. In other words, even though we know there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Al pishnayim eidim yakum gomer, there's a pasuk well known that says that you need two witnesses in order to establish something as fact. But that only applies in certain areas of halacha. That applies by monetary cases. That also applies by cases pertaining to marriage and divorce. But when it comes to regular Isser v'Heter, right, you go into somebody's house, how do you know the food is kosher? So, because they tell you so. Okay, so who told you this? The Baal HaBayis, or the Baal HaBayis, the husband or the wife, said, my food is kosher. So you don't have two witnesses, you didn't have two people standing there in the kitchen as the chunk was being made on Friday. How do you know it's good? The answer is because you're allowed to rely, when it comes to Isturim, you're allowed to rely on one witness. And you're allowed to rely, says with C.K. Frank, therefore it seems that this person is a Jew, it seems like there's no doubt that this person is a Jew, and as such, the halacha is Eidah Benamin Bisur. Now, what's interesting here is, because we know that in the laws of Eidos, that in the laws of testimony, there is a pasuk which says, and mentioned it just a moment ago, Al-Pi Shnayim Eidim Yochum Tov. Al-Pi Shnayim Eidim Yochum Tov means that, the Gemara says very literally, through the mouths of witnesses, things are established as fact. And the Gemara says in several places that from this we derive a halacha which is called Mipiyam Velo Mipik Sovam. That testimony can be given by, in the Jewish law, testimony can be given only verbally. It cannot be given through a handwritten testimony. Which means that if there's a Din Torah going on and they want to call people, a person to be a witness, and the guy said, I can't come, I'm busy, I can't take off from work, but I'll write it down on paper, I'll get it notarized, whatever, send it in. Shalach is no good. It's no good. Mipiyam Velo Mipik Sovam. Avis cannot be written down. So this rabbi who wrote to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said, so what he countered is Pesach and said, but wait a second, but it's one thing, if the person told you this orally, if he told you verbally that the child was born on Shabbos, but you only know that through a handwritten thing. And a handwritten testimony is not acceptable under the halacha. So to that, Rav Tzvi Pesach responded and said that law is also only true in situations in the Torah where you need two witnesses. When you need two witnesses, like by a monetary case, if there's a Din Torah going on, and one person is suing the other for money, and they call a witness and he says, I'll write it, I can't come, that testimony is invalid. But when it comes to issues of Isser Veheter, when it comes to situation, whether something is Mutter or something is Asur, which here is the Shaila, can you do the Bris on Shabbos? It's a question of Isser. Because a Bris is, if it's not supposed to be done on Shabbos, you're doing one of the Malachas. So it's a question of an Isser. Said Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank that the halacha is, there is no problem at all, because you could rely on one witness, and all the laws in the Torah of Eidos that we have are dropped by Eidah and Nem and Bisur. They only apply when you have two witnesses. But, in other words, for example, the most basic din of a person, Eidah and Nem and Bisur, that one witness is enough, that even applies when the person saying the testimony is involved in the situation. As for example, if you go to someone's house to eat, and you ask them, is your food kosher? And they say yes. Well, they cook the food. So ordinarily you say, well, what kind of testimony is that? That's not a kosher witness. A kosher witness is only when the person is unconnected to the case. If you have some connection to this, in some involvement in the situation, you can't say testimony. So that din is only true when you have a situation of we need two aids. In a situation of Dine Mominus, we need two Eidim, then we say, or by Kedushin or Gerushin, then we say that the person has to be detached from the situation. But when it comes to a Shaiwa of Isser, when it comes to a question of is something permissible or not, then you need to know. You need to know what happened. A woman tells her husband, I went to the mikveh. How do you know she went to the mikveh? You don't have witnesses. The answer is because she's believed to say that. She's believed to say that. Why? Because Eid Echad Neman Bisurin. Because all you need is one witness when it comes to a situation of an Isser. I will say, yeah, but you can't believe her. She's involved. How can you believe her? The answer is that this law doesn't apply in a situation of Eid Echad Neman Bisurin. And therefore, it says with Tzvi Pesach Frank that on this basis, the halacha would be that if you found that where the note was attached to the child, he permitted it, that they could do the bris on Shabbos, even though it was just one person saying it. It was unclear who the person was, but they had reason to believe it was a Jew. And even though it was submitted in writing, yes.
How would this work? Like in the case of a woman and God, and say she went to the mikveh,
yeah.
Is she discredited herself in that regard.
So that's something else. If the person is, if you know the person isn't trustworthy, that's something else.
But it has to have been that they did something not to be trustworthy. So in the absence,
right. In general, a person has a chesed sky. If a person says that, you go to someone's house, says, "How do you know you could eat their food? How do you know? How do you know it's kosher?" So you'll say, "Well, they told me it's kosher. They're serving it to me. So that means they're telling me it's kosher." Okay, so who's telling it? Do you have witnesses? You don't have kosher witnesses. They're not kosher witnesses by the general standards of Avis, right? Or any other situation like that. Now, how do you know the Erev is good? How do you know in this neighborhood the Erev is good? Because Rabbi Selmar told you the Erev is good. Rabbi Selmar's a big tzaddik, but he's only one person, right? He's not two witnesses, right? He doesn't bring Avim with him every week to say that Avim is kosher. So the answer is, because this again is a shiloh of an isser. Because the issue at hand, Ruth, is can you carry on Shabbos or not? If you can't carry on Shabbos, that means you're violating the Isser of Shabbos. In such situations, you just need one witness. They have a mashgiach in a restaurant, we have one, we don't have two, right? All these situations, many, many cases like that of Isser Behetzer. This is the Pesach of Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank. Yes, sir.
Don't you see a problem in this particular case? You don't know whether it's a cesarean birth or not.
Oh, so that's a good question. So why didn't he? Yeah, that's a very good question. How come he wasn't worried that maybe the child was born a cesarean birth? So it could be that I would have to guess that in a situation like this, we go bust a row, that the majority of cases of births are not cesarean, right? But theoretically, that would have been an issue. Right? That would have been an issue. You're right. That would have been an issue. So I guess the answer to that is he relied on the fact that the majority of cases doesn't happen that way. And therefore you don't have to worry about it. But the law that you can rely on a majority, it only applies when you can't check it out. When you can't check it out, right? If you can check it out, then you can't rely on a majority. The reason why everyone checks eggs before they put it into their food, right, to see if there's a blood spot, the majority of eggs don't have blood spots. Right, but the fact of the matter is, if the egg was poured in without checking, you don't have to throw out the food. Surprise, surprise. Right, you don't have to throw out the food because in that situation you can't check it anymore. But where you could check it, the halacha is that you have to check it. So therefore, a moel who gets a call that my wife had a boy and the gris is going to be next Shabbos, he has to ask the question. He has to ask the question. But if the question could not be asked, like in this case, then the halacha would be that you go bust the rub. Okay, one more situation. Yes, sir.
Does the rub have an isser to a right so he doesn't do the bris on Shabbos? It transfers to anyone?
Well, the chiyuv of milah, the Gemara says in Kedushin, the chiyuv of milah really is on the father. If it's not bound up by the father, then it's on the bezdin. So the bezdin, roughly translated into our times, would be, you know, it's on the head of the community. He has to see to it. And since it was entrusted with him, he probably has a bigger chiyuv to do it. So therefore, a bris is supposed to be on the eighth day. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. B'yom HaShmini, that's in this parsha. B'yom HaShmini, Imol Tzara Lasso, the bris should be on the eighth day. So here the Shaila was. So you can't just push it off. In other words, we have to realize that this is a mitzvah in the Torah. A bris should be on the eighth day. A person, yet you have a lot of not a lot of irreligious Jews who yet want their children to have a bris. So it's very common. The Mohelim deal with this all the time. That people want to schedule the bris for a Sunday because that's when they can invite all their relatives to come. And even though Sunday is the 12th day, but nevertheless they don't care. But the main thing is the child should have a bris. So all right, to make it, we all know a bris could be a very, very inconvenient time. A bris could be on Yom Kippur, a bris could be on Erev Pesach. Who wants to be invited to a bris on Erev Pesach? Or even the mole, it doesn't want to do a bris on Erev Pesach. He has hundreds of things to do. There are difficult times of the year. And nevertheless, a bris has to be on the eighth day. If a mole calls up and says, "I live in Miami Beach," if a person calls up and says, "I live in Miami Beach," and the mole lives in North Miami Beach, and says, "Well, there's no mole available, theoretically. There's no mole in my town." There probably is, but let's say there isn't. And so the mall really, according to all the poskim, is mechuyev to pack up and go there for Shabbos. Because it's very important that bris should be on the eighth day. But you have to know it's the eighth day. That's the thing. One last shaila which came up, which is very interesting, it brings a very interesting point, even though it's controversial, psak, is the following. The shaila was asked to the Tzitz Eliezer Rebbe Eliezer, Waldenberg, Tzal, the Shaila was asked to him about someone, a Mole called him and said he was asked to do a bris on Shabbos for a Jew who wasn't religious. And he was concerned that if they have the bris on Shabbos, it's going to cause a lot of chilul Shabbos. It's going to cause a lot of, because they'll drive, people will drive to attend the bris, and they'll probably cook the food on Shabbos, and they'll be smoking, and all kinds of things are going to happen. So the Mo'el said that maybe we should not do the bris on Shabbos for this reason, because it's going to involve chilul Shabbos. So you'll say, but the bris itself isn't going to involve chilul Shabbos, it's just what people are going to do. So who says you should push off a bris for that reason? So the Mo'el referred to a Gemara which is well known. The Gemara in Megillah is on the, this is brought on the, let's see here, where do we have it? It's on the third page. Right? The well known Gemara in Megillah is mentioned in several places in the Shas. Says that the Megillah is not read on Shabbos. If Purim were to fall out on Shabbos, which cannot happen in the way we have the calendar set up, but in the old days before they had the calendar, Purim could fall out on Shabbos. And the question is, so you should read the Megillah, there's a mitzvah to read the Megillah on the 14th day of Adar. So do you read the Megillah in that situation or not? So the Gemara tells us, six lines from the bottom, the Gemara says, Megillah b'Shabbos lo karina. The Gemara says that we do not lay the Megillah on Shabbos. Even were Purim to fall out on Shabbos, it could happen in Eretz Yisrael. It could happen today in Eretz Yisrael, because even though the 14th of Adar can never fall out on Shabbos, but the 15th day of Adar could. Sometimes we have it rarely that Purim is on Friday. And if Purim is on a Friday, that means that in Yerushalayim, where they observe what we call Shushan Purim, so they read the Megillah on the 15th, so they have the Shiloh. That's what, here you go. That's that the Purim, you have to read the Megillah on Shabbos. Says the Gemara that the Megillah cannot be read on Shabbos. What's the reason? So the Gemara says the well known psak that Amar Rava Kol Chayovim Bekriyas Megillah, because everybody must hear the Megillah, but the Einah Kol Bekin the Megillah, the Mikra Megillah. Not everybody is fluent in reading the Megillah, and therefore the Chazal say Zera Shemi Yislana Biyodo Biyela Chesel Baki Wilmos, that perhaps a person will not be capable enough to read the Megillah, but yet he has to read the Megillah in order to be able to admit or hear it. Well, let's say he doesn't have the opportunity to hear it from someone else, so he's going to carry it in the street. He will go to an expert Wilmot to wait till the last minute to learn how to read the Megillah, right, Jewish tradition, but wait till the last minute. The Avirena Arba Amos Brishus Harabim, and he will carry it four Amos in the street. In other words, he may come to desecrate Shabbos. Because of the fact that you could have a situation where there's no Erev, and a person is going to, he's going to say, I don't know how to learn the Megillah, I need someone to teach it to me. But the person who teaches it to me lives two blocks away, so in his excitement and state of sort of confusion that I must hear the Megillah, I must be also the Megillah, he may come to carry the Megillah in the street on Shabbos and thereby desecrate Shabbos. And because of this concern, the Rabbanim said you can't read the Megillah on Shabbos, ever. You cannot read the Megillah on Shabbos. And not only that, says the Gemara, well known, behind the time of the shofar, behind the time of the lulav, says the Gemara that this zerah that the Rabbanan made applies not only to rabbinic law, like the reading of the Megillah, but even to a mitzvah d'oraisa, like the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, or shaking the lulav on Sukkot. We all know that if Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, which commonly happens, that the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Shabbos, roughly once every 3 years, you have that situation. So the halacha is we don't blow the shofar on Shabbos, even though the Torah says that he's supposed to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but we don't do it. And even though the Torah says he's supposed to shake a lulav on Sukkot, we don't do it if it falls out on Shabbos. This is the Gemara, it's well known. So you don't do any of these mitzvahs on Shabbos. So this Mo'el turns to the Tzitz Eliezer, and he says, do you see that when it comes to the concern of Chilul Shabbos, the Rabbanan put aside even a mitzvah d'oraisa, even a Torah mitzvah. So bris milah, granted it's a Torah mitzvah, clearly it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but the fact is that I'm worried that it's going to come to Kol Shabbos. You see, even a situation like this, they were worried about Kol Shabbos. You see, even a situation like this, they're worried about Kol Shabbos, so we should stop the bris, even though I'm quite capable of performing the bris on Shabbos, but I should have a basis not to do it. This is what he said. This is what he said. Now, you could say, in other words, if you think into this a little bit, you'll say, well, there are a lot of differences, not the same thing, because here it's the person that they were worried about in the Gemara was a person that in his attempt to do the mitzvah itself is going to desecrate Shabbos. Whereas the meal on Shabbos, the chil Shabbos, is not going to come about from the mole being mechal Shabbos. It's going to come about from other people being mechal Shabbos. So maybe you'll say there are all kinds of differences that you could make. But the fact of the matter is, and this is the point that I really want to bring out, one could ask that I have a question on the Gemara itself, because the Gemara said that the Rabbanan put aside the mitzvah of shofar, and on Shabbos it falls down on Shabbos, and they put aside the mitzvah of wool if it falls out on Shabbos. So one could ask, how come they didn't put aside the mitzvah of milah if it falls out on Shabbos? The same way we have a concern that a person won't know how to do the mitzvah, right? Why can't you blow the shofar on Shabbos? The tkiyah shofar itself is not a malacha, right? The tkiyah shofar could be done on Shabbos. So why can't you do it, right? Taking the lulav is not a malacha. You're not violating any of the 39 malachas by holding the lulav and an esrog in the hand on Shabbos. Nor by blowing the shofar. It's not a malacha, right? So why can't you do it? Because they were afraid that in your zeal to fulfill the mitzvah, you may come to forget momentarily that it's Shabbos, and not everyone is expert in doing it, and you'll carry the implement through the street. You'll carry the wool through the street. Says, please, Rabbi, show me how to do it. Show me how to blow the shofar. So why weren't they afraid that someone's going to carry the knife of Mila through the street and bring it to someone and say, show me how to do a bris? How come that they weren't worried about? In other words, this question, no one ever thinks in these terms. But if you think about it, we go through life like this all the time and never dawns on us this question. That how come when it comes to lulav, right? Everybody knows that you can go out and get the nicest lulav, but if the first day of Sukkot is a Shabbos, you don't shake the lulav. You don't shake the lulav. Why not? You may carry in the street. So yet on that same day, if you're invited to a bris, you would go. You say, oh, the bris, sure, the bris takes place on Shabbos. Why don't you have the same concern? Why aren't you worried that this is going to happen on Shabbos too? That the guy is going to be Mechal Shabbos? So basically, just, I'll end on this, the Rishonim discussed this Shilas, it's discussed by a number of the Rishonim, it's discussed in Achronim also, but basically we have here, Tosfos in Maseches Megillah says, you have it here on the side of the page, Avi Renar, Bahamut, Rishus Arabin, so the very beginning of the Tosfos, he says, Avo Mila v'Shabbos ein Litzos. Tosfos is bothered by this question, and he says, but Mila you cannot push off, Shehoch Hamira, Shekein Nichrusu Aleh Yigimu Brisos. Because of the fact, because it also says the one answer, because of the fact that the mitzvah of milah is really, so to speak, even on a higher level, even than shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Because the mitzvah of milah is the Hashem made the covenant with the Klal Yisrael, and it says, in the Gemara says that nifrusu aleh yigimul brisos, that there were actually 13 covenants that were made pertaining to the bris milah, and therefore, because it is so, so important, the Rabbanan did not make the gzera. This is what Tosfos says at first. Then he says that the reason for the gzera doesn't apply because nobody who wasn't expert would ever attempt to do a milah. This is what Tosfos wants to say. A different answer, which is very interesting, I'll end on this point. A different answer is given in the Meiri, and it's brought by others as well, and it again ties into the pasuk in this parasha. And they say the following thing, which is remarkable. They say, how is it that the Rabbanon have the right to tell you not to blow the shofar on Shabbos? Right? The Torah says you should blow the shofar on Shabbos. The Torah says blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So even if it's Rosh Hashanah could be on Shabbos, so the Torah says blow the shofar. So how does the Rabbanon come and tell you not to do it? They're telling you to go against the Torah. So the answer to this is that we have a klal that the Rabbanon were empowered to be what's called Oker Dover Minatorah, that the Rabbanon were given the power to to uproot a mitzvah in the Torah b'shev al taseh, if in a passive manner, meaning that when the Torah gave authority to the Rabbanan, the Torah gave them the authority that you could not only institute laws, you could not only institute gzeres, but sometimes you could make a gzera even if it will mean not to do a mitzvah in the Torah. Even though God said do it, the Rabbanan were empowered to tell you you can't do it, as long as it involves passive not doing it. In other words, the Rabbanan could never tell you to eat chazer. That they could not tell you, because that's an active violation of the Torah law. But to say don't do a bris on Shabbat, to say don't shake a lulav, or to say don't blow a shofar, that's a passive. That means I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing any action. I'm sitting on a chair. I'm not moving. So that the Rabbanan were empowered. Says the Meiri that this empowerment only applies. It's not good enough that it's shev al taseh. It also has to be that it's not head on against the Torah. Meaning like this: when it comes to blowing the shofar on Shabbos, the Torah never says specifically to blow a shofar on Shabbos. The Torah says blow a shofar. It says on the Yom Teruah Yelachem that on the first day of Tishrei is the day to blow the shofar. How do you know it's to blow the shofar on Shabbos? So the answer is because the Torah says to do it. So the Torah said, didn't tell me do it only on this day, on this day, this day. The Torah said do it. So it means all days are the same. But the Torah never said it explicitly. Same thing with wolves. It says, Olkachtam lechem b'yom harishon. It says, on the first, you should take a wolf. It doesn't say when. But when it comes to bris on Shabbos, so as we said at the outset, since it says, u'bayom hashmini imo b'sar aloso, and from the extra word bayom, the Gemara derives to yom afilu b'shabbos, that this would apply even if it was on Shabbos, says the Meiri that here the Torah told you specifically to do it on Shabbos. If the Torah told you specifically to do it on Shabbos, then you don't have the right to say, then the Rabbanan, even in a Sheikh al-Tasa situation, the Rabbanan did not have the ability to tell you you can't do it. In other words, the Rabbanan only, even though it's only a passive violation of the law, I'm not doing the bris, okay, but I didn't do it, I'm not actively going against the Torah, I'm going against the Torah by not doing something in a passive manner. Nevertheless, says the Meiri, and this is brought in the Taz in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Taz says that when the Torah specifically says a halacha, and it says specifically do it on Shabbos, the Rabbanan don't have the ability to tell you not to do it. And therefore, the halacha is commonly, as we all know, that a bris takes place on Shabbos, and even if one were to say that the reason not to do it by lulav applies just as much to this, it doesn't matter. Because in this situation, the Rabbanan are not empowered to stop a mitzvah in the Torah. On this basis, I'm going to go into it, but the Tzitz Eliezer wanted to say that therefore the bris should go on, even though people didn't be mechal Shabbos, because the fact that if it will be related to Shabbos is not a reason to push it off. This is a very controversial thing, not everyone agreed with him, but I just wanted to point this out, that this is a basic law that we all take for granted and we never stop to think about it. But this question that how come we're worried about, we don't do mitzvahs on Shabbos, and we're worried it may be carried in the street, and yet milah is commonly done on Shabbos, and we don't have this worry, these are the reasons. Yes.